Transgender Freemasons, really, 3D guns and the great Bigfoot battle of 1924, all this and more on this episode of JPD Weekly. How are you all doing? I hope you are doing well. I, of course, am Josh Peck, host of Josh Peck Disclosure, and I am excited to be with you today. Now, I'm doing this episode live for a couple of reasons. First, I was not able to do this month's monthly Q&A for my patrons on Patreon, patreon.com/Josh Peck, if you want to be involved. I was not able to do it because of my knee surgery and everything, and you know, stuff just got in the way. So I wanted to make up for that somehow, and I figured that this might at least be one way to do it, is if I do the show live and we get people on the chat that can ask questions. We already got some people here. Somebody's saying, hey, congrats on the new baby. Thank you. Can't wait for CERN news. Yes, we're definitely going to be talking about CERN, that they're colliding atoms now, and that is different than protons. We will be getting there. And somebody's also asking, have you heard about the mini version of the LHC that's here in New York somewhere? I will look for the info. I linked you an article this past winter. If that is, what's it called, Brookhaven or something? I'm not sure if that's the same thing that you're thinking of. But if that's the one, then yes. If it's something new, then I don't believe I've heard of it. So see, this is why I wanted to do a live video, because people can ask questions and I'll take questions in between the stories. I've got seven of them, so we'll be here for a little bit. It'll be a lot of fun, and I'm excited to do this episode. This also counts as tomorrow's episode. So tomorrow, Friday, LHC is the Large Hadron Collider, Kay. Somebody named Kay is asking that. So, but tomorrow I will not be uploading a video, because this is two videos for today, Thursday. This video counts for tomorrow, so you still are getting a video every day. Although tomorrow I will put this up on Patreon and Blog Talk and Facebook and all that stuff, all the places that it goes. But anyway, so the very first story that kind of caught my attention is that... And it was weird because it was on BBC, so I guess you shouldn't expect anything less. But Freemasons are now accepting transgender women who joined as men. What a weird story, because you would think that, you know, usually when you think of secret societies, you think that they're just kind of not a part of the same political type of things that go on in our normal day-to-day lives, you know, but apparently they're caving to the left as well. So I wanted to talk about this because it's interesting. And as I said, for people who are just joining us, I will be taking questions in between stories, but feel free to talk in the chat. And yes. Okay. And then yes, the person who asked, about the mini collider, it is Brookhaven and smashing atoms. How about the attack on conservative women? Well, this might play a part in it. So let's get to this. Freemasons are now accepting transgender women who joined as men. Now, expelling Masons for transitioning was unlawful discrimination, the United Grand Lodge of England warned. And the acronym for that is UGLE, which spells out ugly, which is kind of funny, but it says women who transition to become men should also be allowed to join, its new gender reassignment policy states. So the guidance document says that a Freemason's gender reassignment should be, quote, treated with the utmost compassion and sensitivity, end quote. Irrespective of gender identity, I don't know if it's actually uglies or maybe Ugles or something. We'll just say uglies. The uglies, 200,000 members will still formally be referred to as brothers, the document says. Well, that's not very progressive. But informally, they should be addressed, quote, by the name and title he/she has chosen, end quote. It warns that using a Mason's transition as a reason for excluding them from a men-only lodge would be, quote, unlawful discrimination and so could never constitute sufficient clause, end quote. Remember, this is coming from England, where this kind of stuff is unlawful and things. But it's headed over here in the U.S. I mean, if California is any indication, and it always is, then it won't be too long. The document issued to 7,000 lodges across the country says, quote, if a Freemason who is a member of Ugly wishes to change gender and become a woman, we expect that the Freemason would receive the full support of their brethren. So Freemasonry, known in popular culture for arcane rituals, secret handshakes, raises millions of pounds for charity and has some 6 million members worldwide. This is kind of the BBC's way of softening the blow of what Freemasonry is. So they're also saying famous Freemasons have included Sir Winston Churchill, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Rudyard Kipling, and Oscar Wilde. So see, it's fine. It's family fun. Each lodge holds 4 official meetings a year to welcome new members, and the ceremony's contents have always been a closely guarded secret. So those now eligible to become a member of a male-only lodge include men. A Freemason who joined as a man but later underwent gender reassignment surgery to become a woman, or a woman who underwent reassignment surgery to become a man before applying to become a Freemason. So in a sense, given the right set of circumstances, anybody can join now. Men, women, some sort of havesy, it's fine now. But now, while women, you should say, like, traditionally gendered women cannot join the Yugle or whatever. I'm getting sick of the ugly joke. Cannot join the Yugle. There are 2 female-only lodges, the Order of Women Freemasons, OWF, AUF, and the Honorable Fraternity of Ancient Freemasons, HFAF, which also refer to members as brothers, oddly enough, because it's patriarchal and oppressive. Now, there are about 4,700 female Freemasons in the UK. I'm actually surprised it's that many. I thought maybe 10. Now, the document says it does not impose binding rules and does not constitute legal advice, but it adds, quote, a Freemason who after initiation ceases to be a man does not cease to be a Freemason. We expect that Freemasons will act with compassion and sensitivity towards their fellow Freemasons, end quote. A spokesman for the Yugle said, while there has been no general request for guidance on gender reassignment, questions on the subject are likely to become increasingly common in the future, and now appears to be an opportune time to issue general guidance to our members, end quote. Now catch that. There has been, admittedly, there has been no general request for guidance on gender reassignment. So this wasn't even an issue. It wasn't a question that anybody had asked. This is a classic case of, well, we got to fix something that's not broken. Now, of course, you know, Freemasonry is full of problems and you shouldn't have anything to do with it. But there wasn't an issue of transgenderism in Freemasonry. And even though nobody asked, they decided, well, shoot, let's just fix that too. So we're seeing this kind of thing more and more where either a minority or no one at all raises an issue. And then the majority has to like bow to the whims of the, you know, few people. You know, I mean, in our country, transgenders make up something like, I think less than 1%, but let's say it's 1%. I do think it's less, but even if it's 1%, look at all the legislation that's trying to be passed for this type of thing. Now, continuing on, in January, the Yugle rejected a claim from the head of the Police Federation that Freemasons were blocking reforms and preventing women and minority groups from progressing. And again, I mean, why is the government involved in this thing? Because it's England. That's what we're headed towards here in America. And I'm not even talking about Freemasonry. I don't care anything about Freemasonry, but the only reason I care about it is because I don't want the same types of government control being implemented in other types of clubs, like anything the government would see as a club, like the Christian Church, for example. Now, David Staples, the lodge's chief executive, said the suggestion was laughable and insisted Freemasons had a history of treating people as equals. Isn't the whole point of Freemasonry that there's like different degrees, and how could you be treated as an equal if you're different degrees? I don't get that at all, but I think that's just politicizing something that doesn't really need to be political. So, of course, I want to know what you guys think. You can leave a comment in the comment section below, or a chat, a comment in the chat box if you're viewing this live. So yeah, so want to say hi to some people. Marty for Jesus the Christ, or Martyr, excuse me, not Marty. Hello, My Soul on Fire saying hi. Rick Dust, good to see you again. He's saying there's been female Masons for a while. Hillary is a member. Very interesting. Did not know that. There's also female Mason lodges. Yep. And if want to, okay, Martyr for Jesus the Christ is saying, if want to comprehend that they are destroying the intelligent English, please, I ask kindly, go see this. Just, oh, come on, Martyr for Jesus. Don't be a spammer. Say some real stuff. It's confusexual, not transgender. Okay, I'll take that comment. You've redeemed yourself. All right, so hello to all of you that are just joining us. We are doing a live Friday show today. Now, something that I wanted to talk about, we've talked about it in a couple other videos before. Is there a second civil war coming? And I've done two videos on this before from slightly different areas, and I want to do another one because I just think this is an interesting perspective too. This comes from the Daily Wire. I was listening to Ben Shapiro today and he made some really good points. So I wanted to go through some of this. And then Matt Walsh is also from the Daily Wire. He's also been talking about it. And I want to go through some of his points because I actually agree with both. And I don't think that they really conflict a whole lot. So, but at the same time, I still kind of have my own idea about it. So Ben Shapiro writes, and this is again from the Daily Wire, there's something in human beings that loves war, at least the idea of war, the ideas of solidarity, existential purpose, bravery, supposedly refined. War actually carries with it the worst of human activity, violence, brutality, and cruelty. Absolutely correct. Yet our politicians are constantly talking about wars, the war on poverty, the war on Christmas, the war on crime, war on drugs. Jonah Goldberg has been quite forceful about the use of such language in his liberal fascism. Such language, and that's a title, such language, Goldberg argues, essentially states that, quote, the experts and scientists know what to do. The time for debate is over, end quote. The time for debate is over is indeed the sense we get from the language of civil war. We're at a precipice and all means necessary for averting defeat become appropriate. Thus, it's unsurprising to see a new poll that shows 40% of Republicans are either fine with Russian interference in elections to help Republicans or don't strongly object to it at all. That is a surprising number. But I also think that part of it is people. I could see a lot of conservatives who get a poll like that, or if they get called, I don't know how the poll was conducted. I could see a lot of conservatives just saying, yeah, it's fine. I don't care, you know, because they're so fed up with everything that the left has been doing. And maybe they don't mean that, you know, but there's no way to really know that for sure. But let's just take it at face value. 40% is an incredibly high number for Republicans or anybody who is okay with Russian interference. Now, do I think there was Russian interference that made any kind of impact, I guess, on our election? No, I don't see any evidence for that at all. But I would not be okay with it if it was, and neither should any American. Because they're Russians. What do they have anything to do with our election? It seems like if there was any kind of Russian meddling, it was so minor. It didn't affect any votes. It didn't affect anything like that. Mike Pence talked about that recently. But all the stuff that Mueller's investigating and all that is just that's so far, at least, it's just a bunch of garbage and there's no evidence. But it's surprising that 40% would say that they would be okay if Russian interfered if it helped Republicans. That's not good because if it can help, if that type of thing, anything like that, if it can help Republicans, it can help Democrats too. So it doesn't have to be Russian. It could be any country. So that kind of stuff, I mean, we're America. We don't need other countries meddling in our elections. But anyway, but there are people that would say, well, after all, if it means stopping Hillary Clinton and the Democrats, then you don't get to choose your allies. But similarly on the left, the aversion to casting out Antifa or radicals like Maxine Waters, who suggests physically confronting members of political opposition has been weak. When you're fighting like so-called fascists like Trump, all options are on the table if that's your worldview, if that's how you see it. But now there are real and important conflicts in America over our future, our past, and our central principles. And no, blame should not be equally apportioned when it comes to the underlying conflicts that are dividing us, because the left's increasing radicalism means that they want to use the federal government to cram down values in violation of basic liberties. You don't see that from conservatives. But we still live in a country where rational conversation is possible and where convincing others is a solution to real conflict. So suggesting that all gaps are unbridgeable merely makes the apocalypse more likely. But ironically, by talking about more, we encourage people to gird themselves up for battle, not return to decency in order to avert war. So Ben Shapiro is saying that, you know, no, we're not in the middle of a civil war or anywhere close to being ready to fight one. We're in a time where when conversation is more necessary than ever, and calling people to arms is a great way to prevent people from having those conversations. So I think basically what he's saying is the more that we talk about civil war, the more it puts war in the minds of people. And if people believe that they're in a war or even if there's even hints, it gives them excuse to go and act violently. And we're seeing a lot of that on the left right now, but you could see it even on the right if this progresses. So Matt Walsh has, and by the way, I do agree with that. But also like Ben Shapiro said, conversations are really, really important. And that's what we need to be having. Now, Matt Walsh has talked about this too. And he wrote about the only thing preventing us from descending, into civil war. And I thought this was a really interesting and fresh, perspective too, that's kind of set apart from a lot of the stuff that you'll see online about, you know, a second civil war and stuff. And again, this is from Daily Wire. He writes that we're told that division, partisanship, and bigotry are destroying America, and that hate is the cancer of our cultural bloodstream. We must fight against hate speech and hate crimes and hate in every other form. That there's so much hate, allegedly, but some people are even worried that another civil war might be on the horizon. And so Matt says that, I think we flatter ourselves. There will be no civil war. We're far too lazy for such an onerous pursuit. It's easier to snipe at each other in the comment section or shoot off insults on social media. We much prefer a tweet war to an actual war because tweet wars don't interrupt a Netflix binge. I totally agree with that. Now, there have been attacks on from the left on Trump supporters. You know, there have been people who have been beaten up just because they wore a Trump hat. Now, usually those happen in big cities or during rallies or something like that. But I think as horrible as that is, I still think that doesn't happen that much. It's still bad. It still needs to be stopped. And I wish the left would disavow all that stuff, but they're not. They're just ramping it up and making it worse and worse and worse. Whereas our extremists on the right, I mean, what do we have? A couple of hundred Nazis somewhere, you know, in South Carolina that want to hold tiki torches up while everybody laughs at them. You know, we're totally willing to disavow those guys. I don't even think technically, though, they would be considered on the right because, I mean, to develop an all-white ethno-state, you would need a large government for that, right? And I don't know of any conservative that is in favor of larger government. That's more of a Democrat thing. And in my personal opinion, I think that I think the leftists will say have shown far more racism, especially today in our modern day, than conservatives have just by and large in a lot of different areas. They're obsessed with race. You know, we on the right, we conservatives don't really think about it very much because we're focused on the individual over the group. So. But Matt makes a good point here that just the sheer laziness of it, it would get too much in the way. And of the left and the right, who would be most willing to actually put the work in? You know, probably the right. But I think that conservatives are less likely to engage in violent behavior to push an ideology because we typically we'd rather have a conversation and battle it out with ideas. but the left doesn't want that because they are fueled through emotion. So Matt goes on here, during the real Civil War, men marched over mountains in bare feet. In the winter, they lived on salt pork and black coffee made from acorns. They charged headlong into cannon fire. They used whiskey as an anesthetic while they had their limbs amputated. They had convictions and they died for them. We do not have that kind of conviction. We have enough conviction to participate in a hashtag campaign or hurl a snarky gif at our cowering adversaries, but Civil War? We need not worry our silly heads about that. We spend literally billions of dollars on iPhone upgrades, porn, video games, tickets to superhero films, and accessories for our pets. How many people would be willing to jeopardize a life of such insane, stifling luxury for the sake of fighting a gruesome battle out in the street? Not many, not nearly enough to even get halfway respectable war together. And that's also right, because look how fast people fold when all that happens is they're called a racist. You know, if somebody from the left accuses somebody on the, well, a lot of people on the right typically would just, I think more conservatives now are just, oh, that's stupid. You don't even know what racism is. And they'll just go about their day. But think about like celebrities and things. There was an actor and I forget his name, but I think he's on the new season of Goliath. He tweeted something just basically saying Ben Shapiro was a nice guy, and then he got blasted by the left over that. And then he deleted the tweet, and then he issued an apology to all the bullying leftists, and how, you know, he's sorry and he's learning more about himself and he shouldn't have did that, and he doesn't in any way endorse bigotry, which Ben Shapiro doesn't either, so they have that in common. You see this like they just fold. There's not going to be a war because you just call somebody a racist and then war's over. It's done. They fold. They give up. They surrender. Matt goes on to say here, I don't say this with disappointment, by the way. I say it because it leads me to an important point. Hatred is not destroying our society. Hatred could destroy a society and has destroyed many in the past, but our case is different. The cancer in our blood is indifference. Our moral and intellectual apathy is the thing that will prevent our country from breaking apart or exploding into civil war, but it's also the thing that will drag our nation as one whole piece into ruin and decay. We have misdiagnosed all the symptoms, the occasional bursts of rioting and violence in the streets, whether committed by Antifa or BLM or white nationalists, the one time that happened, are the result of a deep-seated nihilism. Absolutely correct. Not bigotry. The same can be said for most of the recent mass shootings. The same could be said for the monsters who live streamed the kidnapping and torture of a disabled man, or the teenagers who laughed as a man drowned right in front of them, or the people who watch and cheer as suicides are broadcast online. The rising suicide rate itself, along with the drug abuse epidemic and our reported mental health crisis, all speak to the same problem. Throw in our obsessive TV watching, our addiction to smartphones and the internet, and the rabid materialism that causes herds of Black Friday shoppers to trample each other in pursuit of heavily discounted electronic equipment. The collapse of the family, decline in religion, all of this comes back to the same thing, emptiness, indifference, and apathy. Here's the little dirty secret about the nature of the disputes in the country. Most of the combatants screaming and fighting don't actually care. I saw a thread on Facebook this morning where five or six people were lobbying invective at each other over the issue of Trump's Jerusalem policy. As I read through the exchange, I got the distinct impression that nobody involved in the discussion actually knew anything about the topic or cared. I could imagine one typing his fury-filled comment as he waited in line at Starbucks, another passionately arguing his case while watching a YouTube video of cats chasing laser pointers. People fight with each other online because it's something to do. It's a form of entertainment. No more serious or significant than the cat video playing on the other tab. We are not really a hateful people. We are certainly callous, but our callousness stems from the same hollowness and indifference that informs every aspect of our modern American life. Hollow, callous, indifferent people do not fight civil wars. Rather, they float softly into oblivion. That will be our fate, at least if we stay on our current trajectory. The country will not break apart. We will remain stuck together, but our unity won't be due to any kind of common principle or shared understanding. It's more of a kind of paralysis, or you might say rigor mortis. So very well-written article by Matt Walsh, and I actually agree with that. And this comes after doing a couple of videos on what a second civil war would look like. Now, I do think there are certain issues that could happen that might spawn the left into enough extremism, enough emotional extremism that it does get violent in big cities, enough and widespread enough where against conservatives, where people on the right would be forced to defend themselves. Now, something like that could spark a type of civil war, but I don't think it would be what we typically think of. I don't think it's going to be North and South and each is going to have their armies. I think it would be kind of like isolated battles all over the country and we're just kind of in turmoil and chaos. I could see certain situations where something like that might happen. But, you know, then again, Netflix is still on, so so we don't really know for sure. All right, want to say hi to some people in the chat who are watching. John Smith says, there are no racists, only people filled with anger and hate. Yehovah Shalom is saying, yes, divide and conquer, also controlled opposition. Good to see Peter Birdsall here. Prehistory one would Sodomite Cabal have no doubt. I'm not sure what that sentence is supposed to say, but I recognize the name, and it is good to see you. He also says, peace, brethren, good to see you here. Good to see you here. All right, hello, everybody. John Smith is saying that he's racist against Bigfoot. Well, that's good because you're going to have your blood boiling in a couple minutes. We're going to talk about a couple other things, and then we're going to get to Bigfoot. And so trigger warning, you will feel some of your racism boiling up. Rick Dust says, hi, Josh. Hello, Rick. Good to see you. Glad you're here. So next, we're going to be talking about CERN, some CERN news. In a first, physicists accelerate atoms in the Large Hadron Collider. Now, you might be thinking, I'm thirsty, I should take a drink. You might be thinking, John says he's triggered. Well, then I'm doing my job. hello, Rob. You might be thinking, how is this news? Haven't they been doing that forever? No, they've been colliding pieces of atoms. But this is what's interesting. So not to contend with protons and atomic nuclei, but physicists took on a new kind of particle for a spin around the LHC, which is the Large Hadron Collider. So for those who don't know, the LHC is the big machine. That's the actual machine. CERN is just the governing body that decides what happens with the machine. So they collide different things, but they've been basically colliding protons. Protons and neutrons make up the center of an atom, or what's called an atomic nuclei. They're called nucleons. So they've stripped out the protons from the atoms, and they fire atoms. They strip out the proton from the atom, and they fire the proton, and the protons collide and make things. So an atom is actually kind of a more complex structure because you have the atomic nucleus, which is basically protons and neutrons popping in and out of each other, and you can't locate any of them, and it's all based on probability. Then you have an electron, which it's technically not orbiting the nucleus. Technically, it's kind of a cloud of probability around the nucleus. And if that doesn't make sense, that's okay. it's sort of not supposed to, but that's kind of what it is. Physicists are still trying to figure it out, and it's absolutely fascinating stuff. But that's what they're talking about. So on July 25th, the Large Hadron Collider located at CERN, at the laboratory CERN in Geneva, accelerated ionized lead atoms. So these each contain a single electron buddied with a lead nucleus. So you actually have the full structure that they're colliding now, not just the protons. So each lead atom normally has 82 electrons, but researchers stripped away all but one in the experiment, giving the particles an electric charge. Now, previously, the LHC had accelerated only protons and the nuclei of atoms without electron hangers-on or without the attached electron. But scientists hope the successful test means that the LHC could one day be used as a gamma ray factory. Doesn't that sound fun? Gamma rays, a type of high energy light, could be produced by zapping beams of ionized atoms with laser light, and that light would jostle the atom's electrons into higher energy states, and the accelerated atoms would emit gamma rays when the electrons later returned to their lower energy states. So existing facilities make gamma rays from beams of electrons, but the LHC might be able to produce gamma rays at greater intensities. More powerful beams of gamma rays would be useful for various scientific purposes, including searching for certain types of dark matter, which I'm really interested in. And if you guys in the chat want to talk about dark matter for a little bit and dark energy, we can. But basically, it's dark matter is what they think it might be, are mysterious particles that scientists believe exist in the universe but have yet to be detected. And the gamma rays could also be used to produce beams of other particles, such as heavy electron-like particles called muons, for use in new kinds of experiments. I did talk quite a bit about this in the book I wrote with Tom Horn called Abaddon Ascending. It's all about CERN. Tom wrote the first half. I wrote the second half. It's a great book, but I am biased. But the interesting thing about CERN, and here's where we have to be careful with our, I would never guide anybody to fear anything, but even our concern, we got to be kind of careful. Right now, as far as I know, somebody's asking if I checked out the Thunderbolts project. I did years ago, and it looked really shady, and it looked just, frankly, it looked fake to me, so I didn't really do any more research into it. There were a lot of red flags that came up. It didn't look legitimate, but that's all I can say on it. I haven't looked into it recently, so if there's new information, I'm not aware of it. Our concern with CERN, that's actually a funny story. You know, the original title for that book, for Abaddon Ascending, was Concern for the Future. Ugh. I'm glad we didn't go with that. Tom is much better at book titles than I am. He's named pretty much all of my books because he's so good at it. And I keep asking him to do it. But anyway, we wrote all about that. What we have to be careful of is what CERN can actually do and what it can't do. So right now, as far as I am aware, as far as I know, CERN isn't doing anything that cosmic rays coming in to the Earth's atmosphere from space are doing. Now, it's in a different way, sure, but from all the research I've done into it, understanding how the machine works, how the physics work, understanding all that, the probability of something like bad happening at CERN would be comparable to something bad happening with cosmic rays entering our atmosphere. Those types of particle collisions are the same types of particle collisions. So that's one thing that we got to be careful of. Also, there's a lot of conspiracy websites that want to tell you CERN is basically this magical machine that can destroy the world and create black holes, and UFOs are going to fly in and out of them, and it's just all this stuff. It's all baloney. None of it has a stitch of truth to it. And that's what we discussed in Abaddon Ascending. Now, Could something like CERN play a role in Bible prophecy? We explored that. I'm on the fence on that one personally, and I gave in the book, I give both sides of the story. You know, could CERN have anything to do with Revelation 9? I don't think CERN specifically has anything to do with it, but could some type of scientific endeavor in the future unleash something from another spatial dimension? You know, possibly, because scientists now are wanting to use particle colliders to measure and map the fourth spatial dimension to start out with, and then more after that. And that's not a conspiracy thing. That's actually on it's either CERN's website or the website for the one they either are working on now or are going to build in either Japan or China. There's two different ones. They're going to do a linear one in Japan. That was the one that they were going to use to measure the fourth spatial dimension. I'm not sure where they are on that, but they also want to build one in China that I think would be something like 20 times more powerful than CERN. Now, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. Here's the deal. Whenever they discover a new particle or they unlock some other mystery of the universe, I really enjoy that. I think that's really interesting. You know, when they discovered like the pentaquark, that you could have five quarks in this configuration, I thought that was really interesting. Now, I wrote a blog about it because of the number penta, and people were saying it's a pentagram and all that. I did write a blog about that. Which actually five, if you want to get technical about it, five in the Bible is the number of grace, so it's fine. But but no, just from a purely scientific viewpoint, I think it's really interesting anytime we can learn more about God's creation. Now, I know I just used God in the same sentence as science, but I'm fine with doing that. I host Into the Multiverse, and that's what I do every single episode for 126 episodes now. So it's fine. But I enjoy that kind of stuff a lot. Now, on an ethical level, it's what they're doing at CERN, good or bad. I think trying to reduce CERN down to either good or bad is a mistake, because it depends on what you're talking about. You know, like that mock ritualistic murder, that sacrifice that they did, and it turns out it was actual employees at CERN. It wasn't like college kids that broke in. And we wrote about that in Abaddon Ascending as well. Now that, of course, that's bad. But I would say the discovery of the Higgs boson was really good, because that actually taught us a lot about how we interact, how we as God's creation interact with the outside world, like the outside reality of God's creation. How us passing through God's creation actually gives us mass. We don't just inherently have mass. Mass is an interaction with what's called the Higgs field. So that gave me all sorts of appreciation for God's design, because that's such a cool way to design it. Like I thought that was amazing, amazing stuff. So I think to just reduce CERN down to, you know, CERN good or CERN bad, I think that's a big mistake. But there are certainly bad things. It's just like anything in life. I mean, you're going to find good things and bad things. And then you also have to examine your own prejudices and your own interpretations of the facts and your own preferences and things like that. Because there are things that maybe CERN does that worries me, but maybe that's my own interpretation of it. Maybe that's just my own preference. Would I want to enforce my preference on the rest of the world and in doing so take away some of their freedom? Probably not. But then the other side of the argument would say, well, if they're doing something that could harm the Earth, shouldn't we get involved and do something? And then, yes, you know, we should. But it has yet to be proven, and I mean proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, it's yet to be proven that anything they're doing there is actually harmful, because it's the same stuff that happens when cosmic rays enter the atmosphere. Now, that's on a physical level. On a spiritual level, totally different story. On a spiritual level, and they've been very vocal about this, if they're trying to get in contact, if they're trying to breach other spatial dimensions and get in contact with anything that might be living there, I get why they want to do that pursuit. But in my opinion, in my personal interpretation, I'm willing to admit that, they're just going to find a bunch of demons and fallen angels. They're going to find the entities that all throughout ancient history people have referred to as demons, and just today they're kind of being rebranded as extra dimensional entities, you know, fallen angels and fallen Elohim and things like that. I think they're malevolent, and I think they're really tricky, and I think they're a lot smarter than we are. So that's, to me, dangerous. But again, that's like spiritual, theological, philosophical. That's not physical and scientific. You know, it's different categories of thought. So it would all depend on the context. So if somebody were just what launched me into this whole thing, if somebody says is CERN good or bad, I can't answer that. It's too reductive. Okay, so I want to say hi to some more people who are in the chat. We got Rob Marks here. Great day. Great one day it's going to be like Ghostbusters. Geesh. Yeah, it might be. Pyramid 7 is saying, did you guys hear about all the job posting for your careers in Antarctica? I have not. Hello, Silence Do Good. Swampy McGee saying, is Pentagon Perpetual War Machine the same thing as me? Not sure what that is. Peter saying, know yourself, buddy. Humility before honor, discernment with an understanding heart equals all good. Thank you. I appreciate that. Rick Dusk is saying, I often confuse Maxine Waters with James Brown. That is hilarious. All right, good to see you all here. All right, so let's move on. That was the CERN news. They're basically colliding atoms now. But did you know there's at least a study that say fatty foods don't cause heart disease. It's carbohydrates. And this comes from the Washington Times, which is, you know, it's kind of surprising. It's kind of nice, I guess, that it doesn't have to be just from some person's blog, which, not dissing that, there are some great blogs out there. Oh, speaking of which, check out Michaela Peterson's blog. She's got an excellent blog on this kind of stuff. I just interviewed her recently, and you should check that out if you haven't already. But this year, more than 610,000 Americans will die from heart disease. It's the leading cause of death for both men and women. And for decades, doctors and nutritionists prescribed low-fat diets to people trying to lower their risk of heart disease. Saturated fats and meats and dairy products were thought to clog our arteries. Grains, especially whole grains, were thought to help everything from high cholesterol to digestion. But a growing body of research suggests this advice was wrong. For most people, it's carbohydrates, not fats, that are the true cause of heart disease. So you can consider a report published last year in The Lancet that studied nutrition among more than 135,000 people across 18 different countries, making it the largest ever observational study of its kind. The researchers found that people who ate the least saturated fat, about the same amount currently recommended for heart patients in our country today, had the highest rates of heart disease and mortality. Now, meanwhile, people who consumed the most saturated fat had the lowest rate of strokes. Now, limiting intake of carbohydrates rather than fats is a sure way to decrease the risk of heart disease. An analysis of more than a dozen studies published in the British Journal of Nutrition found that patients on low-carb diets had healthier body weights and cardiovascular systems than those on conventional low-fat diets. So you could consider Marge at age 71. She, and again, this is from the Washington Times if you want to look that up. At age 71, she lost more than 100 pounds in a year without medication, meal replacements, or surgery just by cutting out sugars and starches and eating healthier food. There was somebody else, Denise, had out of control diabetes. Her blood sugar was frequently over 250, a level far above normal, and despite being on insulin. Then she started a low-carb diet, and after only a week, she was off insulin and had near normal blood sugar levels. There was somebody else named Jeff. When Jeff started working with the person who wrote this article, a cardiologist named Eric Thorne, who's affiliated with the Virginia Hospital Center, Jeff had severe lipid abnormalities, but 4 months later, his HDL cholesterol, commonly known as the good cholesterol, had increased by 13 points, and his triglyceride level plummeted from 468 to 78, well below the normal of 150. So all of this was without medication or exercise. The mistaken belief that fats cause heart disease stems from weak and outdated research. So back in 1961, the American Heart Association published its first report recommending that people limit consumption of animal fats and dietary cholesterol. The report cited several studies that showed a correlation between high fat diets and heart problems, but that hypothesis had never been put to the test in a clinical trial. A controlled trial is the only way to prove a cause-effect relationship rather than just mere correlation that could occur due to random chance or some other unknown variable. You know, think of it this way. All the studies that were supposedly done on people who eat red meat, you know, red meat's so unhealthy for you, that none of the studies took into effect the sides that people would get. You know, it was just, do people eat red meat? Yes. See, this is why reductionism is really bad, because you just get bad advice, bad opinions, bad evidence. It's not good. But they reduced it down to just people who eat red meat. They didn't take into effect what else they're doing. You know, you would think typically when I think of somebody who eats steak all the time, I think of somebody who's also going to eat a lot of fried foods and probably drink a lot of beer. They didn't take any of that into account, and they just said, okay, well, red meat is linked to heart disease. And you got to pay attention to the terminology. Linked to heart disease doesn't mean it causes heart disease, though that's the narrative that they try to push. You know, it's like I've talked about kratom on this channel quite a bit. It's an all natural pain reliever that I take. It's a leaf from Thailand. You make tea out of it. Works really well for chronic pain. I use it every day. But the DEA was trying to push this narrative that kratom was killing a bunch of people. They would call them kratom-related deaths. Now, what that means is somebody could literally die of a heroin overdose. But if they had kratom in their system, if the autopsy found any amount of kratom in their system, it would be labeled, it could be labeled as a kratom related death. So if they wanted to include that into their study that said something like, I think it was like 60 or 600 people in the span of 15 years or something like that, died from that, which more people died from eating Tide Pods and stuff like that. But they could call it kratom related. So they used that to push up the numbers, and it still was just ridiculous. So it's sort of the same with the red meat thing. Now, as Dr. Philip Handler, the former president of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, stated nearly 20 years later, after all this bad research, quote, "What right has the federal government to propose that the American people conduct a vast nutritional experiment with themselves as subject on the strength of so little evidence?" End quote. So eventually the National Institutes of Health started conducting clinical trials. However, these trials were deeply flawed. So additionally, when evidence contradicted the dominant medical narrative, researchers effectively buried it. So one NIH study, which found little to no relationship between saturated fats and various health problems, was conducted between 1968 and 1973, but was not published for another 16 years. So that'd be what, 89, somewhere around there. Now, despite the flimsy evidence against saturated fats, mainstream nutritionists still advise people to eat lots of carbohydrates and steer clear of fats. Remember the food pyramid? The AHA recommends restricting saturated fat consumption to 6% of total food, total calories. Federal guidelines encourage people to eat fat-free or low-fat dairy and plenty of grains. This advice is dooming hundreds of thousands of people to early death and disability. Every 40 seconds, someone in the U.S. has a heart attack. The disease costs Americans $200 billion annually in medical care and lost productivity. So for decades, our public health leaders have dispensed deadly dietary advice. That needs to change. Many doctors, including Eric Thorne here, have seen this with their own eyes, how low-carb diets help patients lose weight, reverse diabetes, and improve their cholesterol. And this is part of the reason why I went on the carnivore diet. John Smith is saying, "Kratom helped me get off methadone and heroin." That's awesome. I'm really happy for you. That's really good. That's another thing that they don't tell you about kratom, is a lot of people have used it to get off of opioids. You want a solution to the opioid crisis in the U.S. There it is. But, you know, they don't want to do that, because if they get rid of the opioid crisis, then not only will the DEA not have a demon to fight, but a lot of medical industries will be, they'll just be out of work. So that's a problem that they want to grandstand about, but they don't actually want to fix. Rob Mars is saying, "Yeah, but for the past 20 years, eggs were bad for you, and now they're good for you, and tomatoes are bad." Yeah, it's hard, and this is why I've been trying this carnivore diet thing, because I don't know what's good and bad. I don't know. So what I'm trying to do, and I talked about, I won't go over the whole thing, but I talked about it in my interview with Michaela Peterson. What I'm trying to do is just eliminate everything as much as I can, and survive on just, you know, beef, salt, and water. And surviving isn't even a good way to describe it. It's actually fine. It's not really hard or anything. And I'm prone to craving. I have a weak willpower when it comes to like craving and addictions and stuff like that. But this I haven't had any real issue with. You know, it's a little bit expensive if you do ribeyes all the time. But besides that, there are ways to cut down costs. Anyway, I figured, I don't know what's good and what's bad for humans, but also for me individually, because I think for everybody it's probably a little different. So I figure what a lot of people who are on this diet do is, okay, I'm going to cut everything out except beef, salt, and water for 3 months, let my body kind of reset, and then slowly introduce foods back in and see what happens. See what ones make me sick and what ones don't. Now, some people, everything makes them sick after that. Some people can do eggs and it's fine. Some people find out that they actually had a mild allergy to eggs that they didn't know about. Like I recently found out that pepper gives me heartburn through doing this thing. And I didn't know that. I've had heartburn forever and I've eaten pepper forever. And I'm sure pepper isn't the only thing that's done it. But, you know, it's something I didn't know. So that was interesting. So we'll say hello to a couple more people in chat. Joanna, hello. Good to see you. Thanks, guys. I think Ohio was okay with it last I looked. I am intruding on a conversation that I don't know what they're talking about. So I got Dee Mullaney. What have you been smoking? Nothing. Thank you. But I think that was directed at somebody else. John Smith is saying, I love hot peppers. LOL. And yeah. Christina can just eat ghost peppers. Like it's insane. Especially now that she's pregnant. I don't know. She likes spicy food. It's weird. So Red Pill Production. Hey, brother Josh. Hello. Good to see you again. Good to see all of you. Okay. So let's move on to the next thing. We're going to talk about Bigfoot again. You know, this is weird. I'm going to go on just kind of a slight tangent with this beforehand, because the last time that I did that in a Bigfoot video, it was just a rousing success, and I didn't get a single comment from anybody who said that they didn't like me talking for 4 minutes before getting to the Bigfoot story. Since everybody loved it so much, I figured I'd do it again. Dee Mullaney saying, you're the one talking about transgendered Freemason and the Civil War against Bigfoot. Yes, I am. Doesn't mean I have to be smoking anything. What are you smoking? Why don't you get it? Actually, we are going to, at the very end here, we are going to be talking about marijuana. But I've tried, okay, I did a Bigfoot video a little while ago. It was the Human Bigfoot War of 1855, and it exploded. I got like over 100,000 views on it, which is really rare for my channel because I'm lucky if I break 1,000 on any of these videos. I have the subscribers, I have the audience, it's just YouTube keeps suppressing things. But every once in a while, one will slip through. So I tried doing a couple more Bigfoot videos, and they just got nothing. I'm probably expecting the same for this one, but you never know. Apparently, because it was a clip taken from the weekly show, I had a big lead-in for the story, and like nobody liked that. I got a ton of comments saying to knock it off and just you know, to shut up and get on with the story. So I'll do that here. How a 1924 Bigfoot battle on Mount St. Helens helped launch a legend, Throwback Thursday. So this comes from this comes from Douglas Perry on OregonLive.com. So he writes, what defines the Pacific Northwest in the popular imagination? Surely a mix of stereotypical images comes to the average American mind. Serial killers, indie rockers, strong coffee, and liberal politics. Then there's the Peace Day Resistance. Bigfoot, our famous hidden resident. It's one of the Northwest's most familiar in-jokes. Sasquatch can be found on hipster mugs and t-shirts. And hairy beasts roam the streets on Halloween. A popular music festival is named after the creature. And as a result, it's been largely forgotten that intrepid investigators in these parts took the mystery seriously for years, tracking giant footprints and collecting reports of freaky whistling noises heard in the forest. Now, no one knows for sure when the Northwest Bigfoot legend truly began, but the most successful launching pad for the public's obsession with it is known, a battle that supposedly took place on a narrow gorge on the east flank of Mount St. Helens. The gorge is now called Ape Canyon. Now, that's where, in the summer of 1924, a group of gold prospectors stumbled out of the woods, shaking and glassy-eyed, to tell of a 7-foot-tall ape-like animals attacking them with boulders. So it was Fred Beck, Gabe Lefevre, and John Peterson, and Marion Smith and Smith's son Roy described coming upon gorilla men near where they had built a small cabin for their gold hunting forays. They claimed they were 8 miles from Spirit Lake when they encountered four of the giant animals moving through the forest with erect human-like strides. Quote, they are covered with long black hair, end quote. That was from the Oregonian. Is that how you say it? Oregonian? The Oregonian reported. Oregonian. Relating the descriptions offered by the men, quote, their ears were about 4 inches long and stick straight up. They have 4 toes, short and stubby, end quote. The witnesses estimated each animal weighed about 400 pounds. Taken aback by the sight of the huge beast, Fred Beck fired his rifle at one of the creatures and struck 3 times. The wounded animal toppled off a cliff. Beck reportedly claimed years later that another member of the party fired the shots. But as it turns out, the violence proved a mistake. So that night, the men said, they were awakened when huge stones began clomping against the outside of their cabin. Then they heard and felt giant bodies slamming against the walls and the door. The ape men, apparently, were seeking revenge. The beast eventually tore a hole in the roof, allowing them to target Beck. Quote, many of the rocks fell through a hole in the roof, and two of the rocks struck Beck, one of them rendering him unconscious for nearly 2 hours. End quote. Again, that is from the Oregonian. Now, finally, the prospectors said the sun began to come up, which prompted the animals to break off their attack and slip away. When the men poked their heads out the door and when they decided the coast was clear, they ran out of the woods. So tales of giant ape men weren't exactly new to the area. Hunters, lumberjacks, and prospectors have seen massive footprints now and again over the years. Native Americans in the area had spoken of mountain devils, but very few people seriously worried about the possibility of huge unknown creatures being out there in the forest. But that changed when the gold hunters returned to civilization that summer day in 1924. The dramatic story of their battle with large human-like beasts was irresistible and thus hard for people to dismiss. So with news reports and word of mouth causing the local sensation, the U.S. Forest Service decided to investigate. Now, Rangers J.H. Huffman and William Welch hiked into the forest with Beck, who took them to a cliff where he said the wounded ape man fell. Quote, from the Oregonian, a ranger scrambled down the supposedly inaccessible canyon and found nothing, end quote. Now, some might say, well, that's because they bury their dead. Some might say it's because it never happened. Beck and the rangers continued on to the prospector's cabin, and Beck pointed out the large stones that had been used in the attack. Huffman and Welch were not impressed, concluding that the gold miners had probably placed the large stones there themselves. But an Oregonian reporter asked the rangers when they returned to Kelso, Washington, what about the 14-inch long footprints near the cabin? Huffman created an imprint on the ground using the knuckles and palm of his right hand. They were made that way, he said. Despite the rangers' debunking of the story, people still wanted to believe, and the tale continued to spread. From the Oregonian reporter, quote, friends and acquaintances of the five men who reported their experiences are of the belief that they actually saw something which cannot be explained, end quote. Now, Cowlitz tribe member Frank Wannasey told a reporter about peculiar creatures the tribe's elders have often spoken about. Quote, again, all these quotes are from the Oregonian. If it's not, I'll just tell you. I don't want to keep saying Oregonian over and over again. Quote, Mr. Wannasey described them as between 9 and 10 feet tall, correspondingly large in stature, and their bodies covered with long hair, end quote. Also, the report continued to say that they were never seen traveling only at night. Now, Wannasey insisted that the animals were harmless. Now, in the years that followed, the prospector's story would be repeated time and again, inspiring various sightings of and theories about the beasts. Since then, Oregonian reporter Anita Nygaard wrote in 1974, quote, tracks have been sighted on the Lewis River, attested to by rational and honest witnesses. Occasional campers and motorists have been startled by glimpses of huge and mysterious hairy creatures walking like men, disappearing into the woods, end quote. Again, that is from Douglas Perry at OregonLive.com. I am interested to know what you think about well, I guess this story, but just the whole Bigfoot mythos, just the whole thing. I've said it in other videos. I'm on the fence with it. And, you know, I get people from both sides. I get people that say, you know, I'm an idiot for even entertaining it as a possibility. But then I get people who say, and these ones actually bother me more, because that stance, okay, I get it. But these ones bother me more, the ones that say, Josh, if you still think that Bigfoot isn't real after you've read all the reports and there's just no helping you, and you know, you're just so stupid and all this stuff, because I don't believe in Bigfoot. It's like, okay, the burden of proof isn't on it's on you to prove it to me. Like, prove it. Like, right now, all there's a lot of subjectivity in it. And I'm not even saying that I don't believe in it. I actually would not be surprised if some type of giant ape animal man thing was found. I wouldn't be surprised about it at all because it would answer a lot of things. At the same time, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. I find it fascinating. It's an interesting story, but I'm not going to teach my kids that it's absolutely hardcore 100% truth because we can't know that. We can't know that yet. You know, I mean, there's a lot of evidence, but there's also a lot of evidence the other way too. You know, it's just, it's one of those things. It's like aliens or UFOs or any of these things that it's interesting to talk about, but we shouldn't be so dogmatic about it to just assume that whatever we happen to know as truth must be the truth. And if anyone else doesn't accept it, then they're stupid and they're an idiot or they're a shill or they're trying to obfuscate the truth from other people. That's such a simplistic, ignorant way to think. I mean, it's unsophisticated. That I would never want my kids to learn, you know, that way of thinking. That's terrible. If you believe in Bigfoot, I want to know why. I mean, I think that's fine. If you believe in it, you should believe in it, but you should also have reasons why you believe in it. That's why I'm just flat out honest about it when I say that I'm on the fence. I don't know. I don't know. It could be, or it might not be. It's either this one thing explains a lot, or a lot of things explain all of these things. You know, if Bigfoot isn't true, then there's a lot of different things that have to explain all this stuff, right? And fine, that could be it. There's situations like that in the world too. But I don't know. Somebody is saying Brenton's Darrow and demon abduction was sad and interesting. I interviewed Brenton Sauna. He's a good friend of mine. I like him a lot. I interviewed him for, I think, almost like 4 hours, if I remember right, on his Darrow encounter. I also interviewed Sarah Brown for about 4 hours on her Bigfoot encounters. From what she says, she's basically got them living in her backyard, and they've been obtrusive and they bothered her a lot, basically. And I don't have any reason to not believe her. You know, I believe that she's telling me the truth. Now, whether that is actually what it is or not, I don't know. I don't live there. I haven't seen it myself. I have no clue. Even if I did see it myself, I would have to wonder. You know, I've seen strange things in the sky before, but I don't know what they are. I can't just say that it's an alien spacecraft. Maybe it's a satellite or a meteor, or maybe it's a plane, or maybe it's secret technology from another country or something. Who knows? But I think that if we just take this really hardcore approach of, no, you have to believe it, and if you don't exactly believe 100% in this thing, then you're all of these bad things. That's what liberals do. Why are we as Christians doing that to one another? That's like not even really liberals. That's what leftists do. That's their mentality. You know, if you support Trump, then you're a racist and a bigot and a homophobe. You're all these horrible things just because of this one thing, because you don't believe this one thing that they believe. It's like transgenderism that we talked about before. If you don't follow that narrative, then you're transphobic and you're trying to strip humanity from other people. That's how they say it. What are we as Christians having anything to do with that type of stupid mentality? You know, if somebody doesn't believe in whatever belief you believe in, so what? You know, great, because it's actually good, because that opens the door to a really interesting conversation if you know how to have one. If you know how to set your ego aside, and if you can be respectable to one another, you can have some really interesting conversations with people that you don't agree with. And it helps their argument and helps yours. Maybe one of you will change the mind of the other, maybe not, but you'll both come out stronger for it. That's iron sharpening iron from the Bible. Iron sharpening iron does not mean we all have to agree with one another. It's like in the high priestly prayer when Jesus was praying to God and the Father, and he, you know, what did he say? Did he say, Lord, give them all perfect theology so that the world will know that I came, that I exist, that I'm here? I'm paraphrasing. No, he said, let them love one another and be in perfect unity as I am to you. We're supposed to be so unified. We're supposed to be as unified as Jesus is with the Father. How is that even possible? But that's what Jesus prayed to the Father on his own. You know, this wasn't some type of lesson he was just trying to teach to somebody. He was giving a prayer to his Father. This is God in the flesh talking to God in the spirit in heaven. And he prayed that we would all love each other and be so unified as the Son is unified with the Father. And through that, the world will know that Jesus came. If we want to evangelize and save souls, it's not going to be by fighting about UFOs and Bigfoot and ghosts and demons and raptures and flat earth and, you know, just all this stuff that, all this stupid stuff that we fight about. It's not going to be through any of that. The world is going to look at that and laugh at us because what a stupid thing to do, you know? Because in their view, when they fight, at least it's about something important. You know, that's how they see it. But that's the world. That's people who aren't believers. Of course, they're going to think ignorantly that way. They don't know the truth yet about Jesus and the gospel. That's what we're for. That's what we're supposed to be going out and doing. If we waste all our time fighting with each other because we don't believe in something, you know, save for Jesus and the crucifixion and all that stuff and his saving grace, that you kind of have to believe in to be a Christian. But you know, just all the other stupid stuff. If we're so focused on each other, we're not focused on trying to attain that perfect unity with one another that Jesus had with the Father. So I don't care. I'm interested in the stories. I like the stories. But I hate the vitriol around all this stuff. It's the same with the Nephilim stuff. I'm interested in that as a topic. I think Christians should be. It actually, you know, the topic of Nephilim opened up a lot of the Bible that wasn't open to me before. But I hate the vitriol around it. And it brings me to the point where just on my human side, I have to say, I don't care if I ever hear the word Nephilim again. I'm so sick of it as a topic because I can't stand people fighting about it. It's the same with flat earth. I mean, and maybe this is my human side. Fine. It is what it is. I do not care about flat earth. I do not care anything about that. That is not a topic of interest of mine at all because of all the vitriol around it, because you can't convince anybody of anything. You can't have a respectable conversation with anyone about it. I'm speaking generally. There are a couple people out there that are actually really cool. Immediately comes to mind John Pounders from Now You See TV. I like him a lot. He's big into the flat earth stuff, and great, he should be. If that's what he believes in and he's got good reason to believe in it, then he should be that. Fine. I don't have any problem with that. That's good. I'm not. I'm a globe guy because I have reasons for believing that, and good. Fine. I should be that. Jesus didn't ask for us to have perfect theology. He didn't ask for God to give us perfect knowledge on how to interpret the Bible. He asked for us to love one another so that the world will know him through that love, through us. So that's the solution. It's not about fighting about flat earth. It's about love. Okay, I didn't mean to get on that big tangent, but I think that's important. So hopefully that helps. John Smith saying flat earth is annoying now. Okay, the topic in and of itself, no, it's just some of the topic of flat earth is not annoying. It's just some of the people that want to turn, they make that their hill to die on. That I find is annoying because it shuts other Christians out and it makes other people who we should be evangelizing, makes them look like idiots. And I know people say, well, people have gotten saved through flat earth. No, they didn't. They got saved through the Holy Spirit. They did not get saved through flat earth. If the Holy Spirit wanted to, he could get somebody saved through a phone book. You know, it doesn't, that isn't even a part of the equation. Joanna saying good rant. Thank you, Joanna. All right. We got quite a few more people in the chat. I want to say hi to all of you. Thank you for joining. Let's move on to the next topic. We got two more and then I will take some questions from the crowd. So we got two more quick stories here. Jen says LOL phone book. Well, it's true. It's just, I don't think the idea of, well, it would be like me saying, well, you know, I got saved because I found out what the Nephilim were. Okay, well, the Nephilim in the Bible were terrible, awful, evil beings that aren't redeemable at all. So they're not like a good thing. You know, it's good that might have helped some people come to the saving knowledge and grace of Jesus Christ, but it could have been anything. You know, who cares? That's not a valid response because it could have been a phone book. Could have been anything. The Holy Spirit is that powerful. Okay, so let's talk about 3D guns because this is funny, and I have to admit it was one of those situations where when I heard this get called out, it's like, you know, all these, you know, I heard it get called out, all these stupid politicians, you know, they don't even know how 3D guns work. They don't work that way. It's not like some people are like printing 3D guns in their basement and just distributing them, and you know, then I laughed along with that. But there's that piece of me where I had to admit I didn't know that either. I really didn't. I had no idea until recently what 3D guns were even about. But again, it's not a reductive. It's not a reductive thing. You can't, any of these issues can't just reduce down. So 3D guns, it works a lot different than what I thought and what many of you may be thinking now. And so I want to talk about that. 3D guns and the truth. Don't get bent out of shape by newfangled weapons. So this comes from Fox News. And it's an opinion piece by Nick Gillespie, but I thought it was really well written. So I want to go through some of this because this helps us understand what 3D guns are and what, if any, danger there really is. So many Americans, including law enforcement officers, were expressing fear last Tuesday over the thought of guns being churned out by 3D printers on demand. And, you know, of course, on the surface, it's understandable, the thought of criminals and terrorists, maybe even mentally ill people, pressing a button and getting rifles or pistols popping out of their printers like candy out of a vending machine. It's frightening, but it's also very mistaken. It is not how it works. So under a settlement reached in June between the State Department and a company called Defense Distributed, it was supposed to become legal Wednesday for the company to make blueprints for hard plastic guns available for download on the internet. But with only hours to go, a federal judge in Seattle issued a temporary restraining order Tuesday blocking the settlement from taking effect at least until August 10th hearing. Now, you might think, well, why is that so bad? That's probably fine. It's not. It's infringement of free speech. But we'll get to that. The order came in response to a lawsuit by 8 Democratic state attorneys general who argued that 3D printing guns posed a risk to public safety. They don't. There's a lot of misinformation floating around about exactly what 3D printing of guns is and what it's not. So we can get some facts straight about a pretty new technology. So for starters, it's important to understand that the Justice Department settled a lawsuit with Defense Distributed because the government was certain to lose. So prior to the settlement, the government position was that sharing printing files known as CADs violated international traffic in arms, ITAR, regulations, and thus could be censored by the government. But Defense Distributed, which pioneered using 3D printing technology to make guns at home and eventually at stores like Kinko's, contended that sharing information about how to make guns on the internet was no different than sharing it in a book or instruction manual. Absolutely correct. You can go on Amazon right now and buy the Anarchist's Cookbook, and you will learn a lot of deadly and destructive things. And that's been around since the 70s, I think. 60s or 70s, somewhere around there. Now, the information sharing amounts to speech and is therefore protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution, the company argued. Excuse me. The First Amendment protects speech that is unpopular as well as popular. So the argument that the amendment protects information about how to build a gun is valid. Okay, so next, you need to know that 3D printing technology is years and probably decades away from being cheap, efficient, and ubiquitous enough that it'll be a major source of guns. So currently, it takes days and a lot of money to print 3D guns, and that's not going to change for a long time. So like a 3D printer to do something like this, I mean, it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars at that point if this is your venture. You know, if a criminal really wanted to just get his hands on a gun and shoot up a school or something, it's way cheaper and it's way more efficient to just go buy one illegally. But more importantly, we know for a fact that having more guns in circulation and the legal right to carry them has not led to increase in gun crimes and violence, even when counting mass shootings. And again, you can go to this piece at Fox News to get the statistics from that. Yet, here's Paul Pinzone, sheriff of Maricopa County, Arizona, which says he is the fourth largest and fastest growing county in America. Pinzone says that conjuring up fantasies that anyone with an internet connection and a 3D printer readily available in stores and online will be able to make untraceable handgun, rifle, or assault weapons with just a few clicks. Not true. Pinzone further warns in the Washington Post that drug cartels, arms traffickers, and terrorists will be able to increase their revenue and the volume of weaponry at the expense of our safety through an untraceable and unlimited method of firearms manufacturing and distribution. Also not true. So we need to understand as well that criminals and terrorists already have access to a virtually endless supply of whatever weaponry they want. I mean, in fact, it's perfectly legal already to build and off the books gun at home with parts you can order off the internet and put together in a few hours. I've shown my muzzle loader that I got for my grandfather. I've shown that on this show before. That was made from a kit, like, I don't know, 40, 50 years ago. Actually, longer than that. Whenever my grandpa was a teenager, he built that from a kit. You can do the same today. Now, given their outlaw status, drug dealers, terrorists, and gangsters are not particularly concerned whether the guns they use are traceable or not. You know, as anyone who has wasted hours standing in TSA lines at airports knows, terrorists are not stopped by sweeping up babies, grandmothers, and everyone else in pointless exercises in security theater or in secret illegal total surveillance programs. Terrorists are confounded by old-fashioned dog police work that and pushback by people on planes. Also, if we want to minimize violence associated with drug trafficking, the smartest move we can make is to legalize drugs, something that both Canada and Mexico recognize. So our neighbor to the north has already legalized marijuana, the only current illegal drug that is used by more than 1% of Americans on a monthly basis. According to the latest national survey on drug use and health, 8.9% of us smoke, not us, I haven't, but just us as Americans have smoked weed in the past 30 days. And that figure includes people in states where it's legal. Now, the next closest illegal substance was cocaine, which 0.7% of Americans admitted using regularly. Misuse of legal prescription drugs came in at 2.4% in the past month. Mexico's new president is pushing for the same sort of marijuana reform that Canada has implemented. And we know from our own misbegotten history with alcohol prohibition that banning substances that adults want to consume creates black markets that are enforced through violence rather than contracts, courts, and voluntary exchange. So attempts in recent years to intensify Mexico's war on drugs has only led predictably to more, not less, violence. Lastly, what's the next best move to reduce gun violence and gangsterism? You know, put more guns into circulation and let people carry them in more circumstances. That's what happened over the past two decades in the United States, and it correlates with a historic decline in violent crime and homicide. So according to government data, since 1996, the number of firearms in America has nearly doubled to 393 million guns. Now, over the same period, it became easier to get concealed carry permits to walk around armed. And yet, from this comes directly from the Bureau of Justice Statistics, which published a comprehensive report last October, says, quote, from 1993 to 2015, the rate of violent crime declined from 79.8 to 18.6 victimizations per 1,000 persons age 12 years old or older, end quote. Over that same period, rates for crime using guns dropped from 7.3 per 100,000 people to 1.1 per 100,000 people. The homicide rate is down from 7.4 to 4.9 per 100,000 people. So it's impossible to know whether the increase in guns caused the decrease in violence, but we do know for sure that it didn't spark a Mad Max-style free-for-all either. You know, there's no reason to think that it would change if and when 3D printing allows us to become our own gunsmiths in our home offices. I think that would be just fine. So I promised you that we would deal with marijuana a little bit, not deal marijuana, but deal with it a little bit. And it came up in that study. So that's why I brought it up. And, you know, it also kind of talks about brings up a discussion about, you know, medical marijuana, if it's fine and if it's not. I used to be vehemently opposed to it, to just anything marijuana related. I'm not anymore. I don't do it myself, certainly not recreationally. If I still do have chronic pain. If I had to go that route medicinally, I would consider it. But for now, kratom works fine for me and it's not even an issue. But I do think if people need it for medicinal purposes, for chronic pain and stuff, they should take it. I do think it could be abused, just like any drug, just like opioids can be, just like alcohol can be. I think it can be abused. And I think those hardcore pot enthusiasts who say that it's perfect, it heals cancer, and it's perfectly safe for you, and there's no way you could abuse this. It's not even a drug. It's so good. It's better than the air you breathe. I think that extremism only hurts the cause. Again, it's reductive. It's reducing it down to just good or bad. That's not going to work. You know, just like anything else, there's good things and bad things, and you got to talk about it a lot to weigh them out. You got to think about it a lot to weigh out what the good things and the bad things are. I do think it should be legalized. I don't know for sure in my audience if I'm in the majority or the minority on that. But it really doesn't matter because it's just how I feel about it. After examining the, you know, researching, examining the evidence, all the arguments for, all the arguments against, I do think it should be legalized. And preferably prescribed by a doctor, but you know, if somebody wanted to go buy it at the gas station, whatever. at that point, why not? So I don't want to get into a big debate about that or a big discussion about it. If it ever does become legalized across America, unless it's for my chronic pain, I'm not going to be taking part in it. And even then, I would probably do the pills or something. Because I quit smoking years and years ago, and I don't want to start that up again. But I think that if people need that to ease their suffering and they do it responsibly, then sure, you know, I think that's fine. And it looks like a lot of people in the chat agree with that. Okay, so I'll take a few minutes, and then we'll cut you loose, but I'll take a few minutes to take some questions. If you guys have some questions, feel free to drop it in the chat box. I'm happy. Again, the reason I'm doing Friday show live today is because I didn't get a chance to do the Patreon Q&A, monthly Q&A. I didn't get a chance to do it this month, and I want to make up for that. So I'm allowing you to, you can ask me whatever you want. I'll do a few minutes of that. Basically, as long as you guys have questions, I will try to have some answers. So feel free to leave some questions in the chat box below. Also, if you have comments or shout outs or anything like that, that was fine. Peter Birdsall is saying the green plants, herbs were given for the healing of the nations. Yes, it does say that in the Bible. But again, we would have to see what herbs means in the Hebrew. I don't even know if marijuana grew in that area. Who knows? But if it did, would that be considered an herb? How would it be considered? But it is prohibited in the Bible to take drugs in order to try to get some type of closeship with God through that. Because that's pharmakeia. It's called sorcery in the Bible, to take some type of substance to enter into an altered state and to try to get closer to God. So I don't know enough about how the ancient Hebrews would have viewed marijuana. I've got extremists on both sides. I got extremists telling me, oh, they loved it. It was great. It was in their anointing oil, and I can prove it if only you will read my 20-page manifesto on the topic, which I'm never going to read. Or I got other people that say, no, absolutely not. They hated it. They detested it. And it's like, I don't know. I don't know. Somebody's saying, please look forward to an email from me. As long as it's not a 20-page manifesto. If it's a big, long thing, I'm not going to read it. And it's not an ego thing. I just don't have time. I don't have time for that, but okay. I'm cautiously awaiting your email, I guess. Martyr for Jesus is saying the registered gun owners are making quite a pushback. Good. Yes, that is good. Somebody is saying pot is like anything else. Even Twinkies can be overused. Yeah. Well, when we talked about that before, I mean, even your own beliefs and passions can, in a sense, be overused to the point where it's oppressive for other people to even want to listen to it. Peter saying seed bearing plants. I don't know enough about it. I mean, would an oak tree, every plant is seed bearing to some point, otherwise it doesn't propagate. Are they all herbs? I don't know enough about it, about how the Hebrews really thought about that stuff. The only quote unquote research I've been able to find is extremely biased, and usually it's in favor. I can't do anything with that type of research because it doesn't, I got to hear both sides of a argument, and I got to be able to weigh it out, and I got to be able to actually look at, like, properly cited source material to even have any kind of opinion on it. So as of now, I just don't have an opinion on it. Swampy McGee, awesome name, is asking, dear Josh, is Zionism the same thing as human depopulation agenda? No, those are two totally different things. I'm not an expert on either, but human depopulation is just the idea that there's too many people in the world and we need to get rid of a few, usually a few billion. Zionism, that's something different, and it all depends on your interpretation. There have been, for me to really get my head around what Zionism is, I'm going to have to do as much research into it as if I was going to write a book about it. Because there's just so many different ways to look at it. There have been arguments that I've heard for Zionism where I thought, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. And then anti-Zionism where it's like, okay, well, that's a little mean-spirited, but I guess I get where they're coming from. So I don't know. But no, those two things are totally different. Totally different things. Pharmakia is always tied to witchcraft. Well, it's sorcery. And, you know, that would be interesting to find out, too, if sorcery and if witchcraft are exactly the same or if they're different in the Bible. What I think sorcery is a branch, and I could be totally wrong. This is just my current understanding, and it could be wrong, but I think sorcery is like a branch of witchcraft, where witchcraft can branch off into a lot of different things. So it would be like saying, yes, sorcery is witchcraft, but not all witchcraft is sorcery. You know, that kind of thing. That's just my current understanding. I could be wrong. Altered states and drunkenness is a sin. Yes. The chat kind of spazzed out on me for a second. Let me find where I was. We're getting a lot of questions, so this is good. Okay. Pharmakia means all drugs and many medicines. I think it's a context issue again. Are you guys saying all meds are sorcery? No. And see, that's where the context comes in. Lisa, thank you for putting that question in. Not all, and this is where I would have to disagree. The sin of sorcery isn't just if you take an Advil or a Tylenol or a Vicodin, if you're prescribed it. It's, from my understanding, it's an actual ritual where you take a substance in order to commune with the spirit realm in some. So today it would be described as like to gain a higher consciousness or to, if you're a New Ager, access the Akashic records or to discover the God within yourself. There's just a lot of ways that it's described. If you're just taking it for pain, if you're not taking it for the high, here's a good way to look at it. If you're not taking it for the high and you're just taking it for the medical problem, that's fine. That's not the sin of sorcery. Now, if you're taking it for the high, whether it's just to feel like just to get a high, get a buzz off of it, or to try to commune with some spirit guide somewhere, then those are, I think those are different levels of the sin of sorcery. I think it kind of works like that. John Smith is saying medical cannabis got me through surgery and off pharma drugs. Okay, awesome. That's good. Joanna saying, got to run. Nice chatting with you. Goodbye, Joanna. Have a great night. Glad to see you here. Let's see who else we got. Many don't. Okay. The chat keeps spazzing out. If I scroll too fast, it goes all the way down to the bottom, and I'm trying to get everybody's questions. The latest news on the pyramids energy focus confirmed your thoughts. I saw that on mainstream media today. I didn't see the article, but somebody else had asked me about that. I don't believe in pyramid power or energy focusing anything, just because, again, where's the evidence for it? It seems like if there was a source of energy that was as simple as that, some private corporation somewhere would be capitalizing like no other on that. And I just don't see that happening. I mean, we got electric cars that are killing people. But again, I'm not an expert. I don't have any reason to believe there's any validity to that. Let's see. That's a question for somebody else. I think cannabis, okay. Local prospector is saying, I think cannabis is fine in moderation, just like anything, but the research I have ever found is biased either for or against. Yes, me too. And that's my issue with it. The research is extremely biased, and it's hard to just find research that's not biased in some way. But that's life. I mean, you can't really find anything that's not biased. You know, a lot of people get mad at the news for being biased. Well, it's written by humans. I mean, it's a human interpretation of the facts that happened. Has there ever been a completely unbiased news source? I don't even think that's possible, because there's always little inflections in your voice. It's going to be obvious if you like the story you're reporting on or if you don't like it. I mean, every news is going to be biased. So I think it's good to watch a bunch of different news sources, some that agree and some that don't agree. and try to form your opinion that way. Let's see what else we got here. All evidence for pyramid power is pseudoscience. I agree. Okay. We already answered that one. Somebody talking about LOL, we're all biased. Yes, we are. Just ask a person that uses it who cares about panels. I don't know what that's in reference to. I am learned in biblical Greek, so yes, sorcery and witchcraft are the same thing. Okay, well, I'm not, so that's all I have to say about it, I guess. I gave you my opinion. That's what it was. So, okay. Any other questions? I'll stay live for a couple more minutes in case anybody else has any more. We talked about marijuana, witchcraft, sorcery, pyramid power, sorcery, witchcraft, science, all interchangeable. I just don't think so. Personally, I love you, Peter. I just don't agree with that. Pyramid 7, Wilcock, and Good Thoughts. Yeah, I think they're hucksters. David Wilcock and Corey Good. So, again, it's one of those shows. They have a show called Cosmic Disclosure on the Gaia Network. We got a couple more questions, too. But basically, it's like Corey Good talking about all these things that he knows about the government and aliens and bird creatures that have spheres laid out across the universe. And David Wilcock is just like, oh, yeah, really? Wow, yeah, wow, that's so interesting. And it's a cool story, but it's a ridiculous show because they're passing it off as truth. And a lot of people believe it, but nobody asks for a shred of evidence. So I made it through a few episodes and I was like, all right. Because after a while, the episodes start to repeat. The information starts to repeat. And then that's where you know, okay, they're really trying to convince you of something. When stuff starts to repeat again and again, it's like, okay, that's all they have, you know? And that's a dangerous trap for any author or researcher of any kind to fall into, because it's really easy to fall into that trap. If you go back and listen to some of my older interviews, I used to do that. I would kind of repeat the same stuff over and over again through a lot of different interviews. Like, not phrases, I just mean like topics. Like if I did one book, I would have a certain way of explaining it. And I didn't really take time to try to understand the audience. I'm a little more careful with that now. But they're really bad with that. So you watch two or three episodes and you get the gist of it. And then it's just repeating over and over again. So those are my thoughts. I think they're both hucksters. I think they probably do believe one another, even though both know they're lying. And I don't think that they're intellectually honest enough to challenge each other on anything that they say. So it's like a match made in heaven. Dear Josh Peck, do NASA and ADL work together to scam civilians in 2018? ADL. I'm not sure what that is. NASA, you know, again, I would say there's probably a lot of things NASA does that is you could consider scamming civilians. Probably a lot of things. Does that mean that I think NASA is all bad or that everybody that works there are bad? No, I don't. I think there's some good stuff too. It's just like anything else that we've talked about tonight. I'm not sure what ADL is though. So that's about as far as I can take that question. Josh, what do you think about Dogman? I think with Dogman, it's basically the same as Bigfoot, just with less evidence. It's a cool story, and in a sense, I mean, I don't want anyone to be hurt by it, but in a sense, I kind of want it to be true just because that would be cool, but I have to be really honest about it. I don't have any real reason to believe in it. I guess I don't have any reason to not believe in it, except that there's no proof, and it's just kind of, there's no proof, so there's that. But it kind of falls in line. I really like cryptozoology a lot. It really interests me, but I'm really skeptical of it too. So not of it as a profession or a valid study of research. I think people should look into that, but I'm skeptical about a lot of the claims that are made. And I think we all should be. Do you follow Q and do you believe in the movement? Lisa, thank you for asking that. I have no idea what this QAnon thing is. I missed the boat when it first came up And then it went on for a couple weeks, and I thought, man, I should probably catch up and figure out what this is. And then I got busy with other things. Me and Derek were writing a book, Derek Gilbert. We were writing The Day the Earth Stands Still at the time, and I was really into WikiLeaks. And I was like, well, I'm doing the WikiLeaks thing. Maybe I'll put the QAnon thing to the side for now. And then I just never got into it. Now it's been like, what, a year or something into the QAnon stuff. I don't know what it is, to be honest with you. I have no clue what on earth this QAnon stuff is about. So I have zero opinion about it. I wish I could help, but I don't know what it is. I haven't been able to find just a simple explanation that doesn't go into a whole bunch of rabbit trails about a whole bunch of stuff. Is there a QAnon for beginners somewhere, like a QAnon for dummies? I don't even know if I'm saying it right. Is it QAnon? I don't even know if I'm saying it right. Let's see if we, so that's about how, where I would, yeah, Blue Avians, those were the bird alien things. Thank you, Pyramid. But yeah, the QAnon, I don't know what to do with. Let's see, honest science is when our maker says Adam named the plants and animals in the garden. Too much of science is skewed or by, well, yeah, okay. So yes, I don't know about that first thing, but I do agree that too much of science is skewed or biased. Now, the science itself is objective, but the interpretations of the science, which is what you get in journals, science journals, and what you get in interviews with physicists and scientists and biologists, the interpretations are absolutely skewed and biased. So yes, I totally agree with you there, and that's where we got to be careful. But like an experiment, if they do an experiment, the experiment itself, let's just say the double slit experiment in physics. You know, sometimes particles act as waves, sometimes they act as particles. The actual experiment itself is objective. Now, how we interpret that is subjective. So what meaning we put on that, what we decide it means and how it all works. Because you get some people that will use the double slit experiment to say that we can create our own reality and stuff like that. It's just not true. So, yeah, I do. I totally agree with you there. Someone sort of asked about 5G. I don't know anything about it yet, but I've gotten a lot of questions about it. It's probably something that I should look into. But I do know Derek and Sharon Gilbert recently did an episode of SciFriday on 5G. They would know more about it than I would at this point. I don't even really know what 4G is, to be honest with you. Let's see. Looking for some other questions. Okay, QAnon is so shady. Probably. Is Pentagon weather modification an act of God 2018? I don't know. I'm not sure what that is. I've never heard of that. Is it just talking about the government having plans on the books to alter weather in wartime and stuff? There are patents and stuff. Whether it's been used or not, I have no idea. I don't know if anyone knows for absolute sure, except those who did it, if they did do it. But if it's an act of God 2018, I'm not sure what that means. Let's see. Q information. Okay. The evil ones are in control at all levels. Okay. Well put, natural creation versus witchcraft abominations. You spoke about EMP. Yes, I did. 5G. Oh, okay. I see. 5G is a microwave. Check it out, Josh. It's a legit microwave. You spoke about EMPs. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't able to catch that episode of SciFriday, but the gist that I got just from the description was they took that approach as well, Derek and Sharon. So, I would definitely suggest checking out their episode and probably asking them. They would be more okay. 5G is upping the microwave energy, cook to fry. They would be more well versed in that. And I think Sharon had said something about it actually alters your DNA in some way or destroys it or something. So I don't know, but I also don't know what the trials are. I know for any product to go to market, it's got to go through a whole bunch of trials. And I don't know what the trials are like to show if this is harmful or not. And if it is, if they fixed it, I don't know. Josh, one of these people, a troll who's trying to distract from fact. I don't know. I'm just trying to catch questions as they come. I really don't know. Is Zionism mean to humanity? Well, like I said, I don't know, Peter. Maybe he is a troll. I have no idea. Like I said, I don't know enough about Zionism to really. I don't know. There's talk that it does not penetrate the skull. Talking about the 5G stuff, it kills it. Storms at sea. Fair enough. Thank you. LOL. It's Q plus anonymous. Okay. See, thank you. I thought it, that's a good start. I thought it was something like that, but I didn't know. And I didn't want to say it and look stupid, but I thought it was Q and then short for anonymous. All right. Good stuff. Okay. Well, this has been great. And it was a lot of fun to answer your questions. Thank you so much for sending them in. And thank you for, joining me on this episode of JPD Weekly. This has been a lot of fun. And if you enjoy it, let me know and send me an email, because that's how I know if somebody is willing to take the time to send an email, then I know that they really mean something. If you like doing more live videos like this, send me an email and tell me. If I get enough of them, maybe I'll do them more often. Do you think EMP can be done via the 5G network? Again, I know nothing about the 5G network, so I have no idea. John Smith is saying, Josh, more encore. Thank you. Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Pyramid. Thank you, My Soul on Fire. Drop the email. Thank you. Yes, it is joshpeckdisclosure@gmail.com. I am typing it in the chat box now. Best way to get a hold of me. If you want to get a hold of me slightly slower, you can go jpeck@skywatchtv.com. The benefit there is it is easier to remember. All right. And everybody, if you want to do like a patron thing or a donation, you can go to joshpeck.com/donate. If you want to help out in that way, that would be great. Because yeah, the medical bills with the, actually Christina set up a GoFundMe, which I don't have the link handy, but if you look at any of my more recent videos, you can find the GoFundMe link, or just go to the Josh and Christina Peck Facebook group. It's there, for medical bills with my knee surgery and everything. So that would be great. And yeah, so I guess that's it. Thank you all so much. JoshPeckDisclosure.com. If you want to get more free videos, free everything in the world, and that would be great. This has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you taking the time. And yes, yes. Okay. Somebody's asking for me to put the GoFundMe in the video description. I will do that as soon as I log off here. So give me 3 minutes. I'll put it in there. If you're viewing this after the live video, click in the description. You'll see the GoFundMe link there. All right. Thank you all so much. I love you all so much. Have a great night. And until next time, take care and God bless.